Well, good morning, Catalyst. How are you today? Nice day. And you know what's so funny is it's going to be 92 tomorrow and the next day. Is that amazing? Here's the crazy thing about that. God must have sometimes a warped sense of humor to me. We have a whole leadership team meeting coming over, and so we invite, twice a year we try to invite all the leadership team over. And that's about, 50 to 60 people. And wouldn't you know, we're going to have it outside, and it'll be 92 that day. Pray that they don't sweat heavily. Will you? I want you to do that for me. It's just, we're so excited to have them over. Hey, look, also, we're about to come into a next season of discipleship. And you know how, if you've been here any length of time, you know how important discipleship is for us at Catalyst, and that we're not only committed to making disciples, we're committed to multiplying disciples. And so we're about to enter that whole season again, and I thought it'd be good for you to hear from a couple of people who have gone through it and are part of this process. And so I've asked Joe and Jessica if they would. I've just got two questions for them. The first one is this: how did discipleship impact your faith? And the second one is, I can't even count on Sunday morning. And the second one is this, why would you suggest for other people to come and be a part of it? So I'm going to turn that over to y'all and just thank you for being here. Go ahead.
Sure. So discipleship has greatly strengthened my faith. I didn't go into discipleship originally thinking a whole lot about it. I was just kind of a learning experience. I thought, I am not a disciple. I will never be a disciple. That's just not my character. Come to find out, it's not what I thought it was. It's very different. But it has just, it's brought me incredibly closer to God, I think, by bringing me closer to other people, honestly.
Yeah, and I would echo the same thing. I think the relationships that we made during the discipleship class are probably some of the most valuable that we have made and some of the strongest that we've made at this church. I also went into it not really sure what I was getting into. To be honest, thought of it just as another Bible study, but it really was so much more. A lot of the things that I've, my whole life, struggled with my faith, it really just helped to clarify them, helped me to be able to see a little more clearly how the pieces all fit together.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Joe and Jessica, so many times we think it's just like a class, but it's so much more. It's really a journey that you share with people, and it's just a fun journey. I mean, you get so close in these groups and in these phases of discipleship that it is a huge impact. Why would you recommend it to somebody else?
I think just to bring you closer to the Lord, and also to connect you more in Catalyst. That's what we're all about here, is just getting people connected and going through discipleship. You do share some things about your story and your history, and it just helps to tie you in with other people, and you understand people better, you understand where they're coming from better, and it brings everybody closer.
And to add to that, I think that you really start to understand people's stories. And I can remember hearing Pastor Rollins say that over and over again, and Ellen says it all the time: you need to know people's stories. And I didn't really think much of it. I wasn't really sure what that meant. But when you get into discipleship class, you start to understand, what that truly means and why it's important. And you really start to think about your own story. I'd never thought about my story or our story and how much that has impacted who we are and where we are today in our life journey. And it's very eye-opening, and it really helps us, too, to be a better parent, I think. At least I hope.
Yeah. We'll take any benefit we can get, right?
My daughter,
Yeah. Hey, do me a favor. Thank these two wonderful people. I appreciate it. Now I want to do something. Now I want to watch a clip of a movie. It's a movie that I love. It's called Hoosiers. Any of you have ever seen it? About Hickory High School, and they go through this underdog stage. They come to a place where they win the state championship. But I want you to understand something. Hoosiers is really all about the stories of second chances. Gene Hackman, who plays the head coach, he has been kicked out of basketball for a physical altercation with a player. He receives a second chance, if you will, to coach. He's come from a college level, and now he finds himself at a very, very small school. And he's made his way there for literally a step of redemption. And he has to go through some real barriers to make it through that. There's a second story in a second person, and it's about a man named Shooter, who is played by Dennis Hopper, and he's an incredible actor, but Shooter is a person, if you will, who has failed at things like his marriage and his parenting. Please hear me. He has an extraordinary knowledge, though, and an extraordinary passion for basketball. So Hagman approaches him literally about a second chance of becoming, if you will, the assistant coach to sit with him on the bench. And he does so with only one understanding, and this is what he says. Above all else, you have to promise me, he looks at him and says, you have to promise me you will never, ever get kicked out of a ball game. Okay, we're about to pick it up here where a timeout's called after Hackman has literally gone to the ref and said, kick me out of the game. He said, what? He said, I said, kick me out of the game. And the ref said, if you're crazy enough to ask it, I'm crazy enough to do it. So he cans him, and now we pick up the story and what's about to happen.
You reckon number four will put up their last shot, Dad?
Yeah, probably. They've been picking low all night. Yeah. Great. Let yourself get taken out. Buddy, you drop down and take his place. Close that lane. All right. Okay, T.
This is the last shot that we got, all right? We're gonna run the picket fence at him. Merle, you're the swing man. Jimmy, you're solo right. All right, Merle should be open swinging around the end of that fence. Now, boys, don't get caught watching the paint dry. All right, take it!
Don't you absolutely love that line? You did good, Pop. You did real good. Isn't life amazing when it gives to us second chances? Is it amazing when we give second chances to ourselves? I mean, for some of us, the reality of it is we can't see the value in a second chance. We can't understand enough that God is all about second chances. I mean, that really is what grace and redemption is all about. Is it not, friends? I mean, that honestly, God gives to you and me something that our previous actions don't deserve. We're literally given a second chance at life to find wholeness and redemption and restoration. It's an amazing thing to me to think about the second chances that God gives us. In fact, the Bible is just littered with examples of second chances. The parable of the prodigal son is all about a father's second chance for a wayward son. The restoration of Peter is all about a second chance given to a man who has denied and deserted Jesus. The story of the common criminal calling out to Jesus for mercy while he hangs on a cross beside him, I want you to know, is it's all about second chances when Jesus says to him, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. I mean, those are absolute words, friends, that define what it means to be given a second chance. Now, I want you to know, our God is all about second chances, but sometimes, though, life through God's providence gives to you and me the opportunity for a second chance. Perhaps, let's be honest, maybe it's to restore a broken relationship, a relationship that maybe we thought was lost forever. Any of you ever been there? I have. I mean, trust me, I've been through those things with family where I wondered if we would ever be restored, where we'd ever have a relationship again where we could just speak to one another easily and not have tension when that happens. How about a chance to right a wrong? Something from our past that has haunted us over and over a period of time. And we recognize that in that moment, in that time, in that season, we failed miserably at some point, some place, in an effort to really make a difference in another person's life. How about if it's a chance to pursue a dream that we thought was lost? Maybe it was an occupation that we thought may be in our future. And suddenly we realize as we look back, the past has already passed us by, and now it's not even on our radar screen anymore. I mean, sometimes, friends, life gives to you and me second chances. But please hear me. Here's the catch. Because being given a second chance and taking advantage of a second chance are absolutely two different things. Moses is a man who we will discover, begrudgingly, in fact, who we will discover took advantage of a second chance. This whole process is determined and filtered for us in Exodus 3 and 4. And we will understand better after we listen through this teaching and process through this with Moses. We'll understand that there are some things that have to fall into place. There are some things that you and I must take a hold of if we're going to take advantage of a second chance. The first one is this. I promise you this, friends, for a second chance to be had, God at some point needs to get our attention. Listen to verses 1 through 4 in Exodus 3. And one day, there's nothing magical about this day. The writer just wants us to know it's one day. Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock far into the wilderness. That other translation is he led it to the far side of the desert, as we talked about last week. You see, this is a place that Moses is not expecting to see anyone or anything. He's in a desolate place. He leads himself to a desolate place. And I come to understand that the more you read about the story of Moses, the more you probably understand that Moses liked the aloneness. Moses didn't have to be reminded from anybody of where he was previously or what statute he held. Moses didn't have to remember what it was to have somebody bring up a conversation that would make him think about something that he failed in so miserably. Moses is on the far side of the desert, not expecting to see anybody. And yet, notice what it says. And he came to Sinai, the mountain of God. You know, one of the fascinating things about this passage to me is that God brings Moses to where God was, his mountain. It wasn't an accidental engagement today. He just didn't happen up. God had laid out some plans that needed to happen in order to get Moses' attention. Did you know, I want to tell you something, friends. Sometimes you and I meet God in the most, if you will, unlikeliest of places and situations. And notice what it says, and there the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. And Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed with flames, it didn't burn up. This wasn't like a cigarette lighter. It's engulfed with flames. It's large enough that it draws Moses' attention to it. And Moses says to himself, "This is amazing. Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it." You see, God understood that Moses was, if you will, an inquisitive guy. He was too nosy just to pass this by. Any of you relate? I would be right there by him. You see, when the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, the scripture says, notice what he says. When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And listen to his response. Here I am. Here I am. You see, this is a moment of declaration for Moses. You can rest assured it was a declaration to say, God, you have my attention. I mean, I am focused here. I want to hear this. I want to understand why this is happening. You see, the crazy thing is God so many times takes the common and uses it in a very uncommon way. This is just another day in the field for Moses. And yet God enables something extraordinary and uncommon to happen. I mean, fire normally burns up wood or bush, right? I mean, fire normally does this. But here God holds the power of fire at bay in order to capture Moses' attention. Remember, it's not that the bush was on fire. Bushes do that in the desert all of the time. But it was the fact that the bush would not burn up even in a blazing fire. I want you to know who came calling that day. Who came calling that day was the God who even controls creation. It was after God got Moses' attention that he called out to him. And I love the way God speaks to him in a personal way. Moses, Moses. It reminds us, friends, if you will, that our God is a personal God. This is not just about religion, about you doing the do's and the don'ts. This is about you and me coming to grips with an understanding that Jesus desires to have this personal relationship. I mean, what does he tell us in John 10 as he talks about himself being our shepherd? And he says two phrases. He says, I know my sheep by name. And notice what he says, and they know my voice. There's something personal, extremely personal about Jesus. It's so powerful, if you will. I mean, the same thing happens to the Apostle Paul. He was then called Saul in Acts 9, where he is persecuting the church. He's literally killing Christians, imprisoning them. He is the most brutal man attacking the gospel at this time. And suddenly Jesus comes to him with such a bright, shining light that it blinds him and creates a blindness upon him. And the Lord calls, he calls out and he says, who are you? Who are you? And he says, I am Jesus. But before that, he just simply said to him, Saul, Saul. He calls him by name twice, just like he does with Moses. Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Here's a crazy thing, friends. The God of all creation that we just talked about, the God that created everything that is, was, and will be, desires to know you and me personally. He desires to connect with us. But before that connection happens, I promise you, God needs to catch our attention. You know, God can use the abnormal to do overly normal things. You know, when I was being called into the ministry, and I'll be honest with you, I wrestled with this for 3.5 years. How stubborn is Roland? Seriously, I wrestled with that. Some of you are just as stubborn, let's be honest. I wrestled with this for 3.5 years, and if I'm honest with you, it was the last thing I thought about before I went to sleep. It was the first thing I thought about when I woke up. God, I don't know what's up, but I feel like there's something more in my life. And I wrestled with this. I prayed about this. I didn't seek as much counsel then because I didn't have the wisdom to understand that. I was too arrogant sometimes to bend and to literally place myself more in a position where others could speak into me at that point. But I remember I'm finally at this place where I'm just so miserable. This is the truth. I'm just so miserable. I cried out to God. I said, God, hey, look, I want to know something. I want to know if this is real. I really do. I want to know if you're serious that I need to go into the ministry, that you're calling me to do this. And I was dating a young woman then. Her name was Deborah. And honestly, we were just great friends. But more than that, she was so deep spiritually, she just intrigued me. And I remember thinking to myself, I couldn't wait to go out on dates with her because I just listened to her relationship with Christ and how it had changed her life. And I just sat there and kind of awed by it. And so I go to pick her up that day, and I go to the door, I get her, we come out, we sit in the car, and then I put the car in reverse, we're backing out of the driveway, and suddenly she just turns to me. I had just prayed this prayer the night before. She turns to me, she said, you know what, Roland Daniels, I think God wants you to be a pastor. We stopped, squealed the tires. I said, what did you say? She said, here, I bought you a book. I think God wants you to go into the ministry, Roland. And I think you need to quit fighting it. You see, God sometimes takes the normal and does abnormal things because God has that capacity to do so. I think this kind of begs the question, if you will, what will it take for God to absolutely get your attention? What will God have to do? Reggie White told Michael Irvin, some of you know NFL football. Reggie White was one of the most dominant defensive tackles in the history of the game. He was also one of the most powerful Christians that you've ever seen. Michael Irvin was a guy who was lost from Jesus, his life totally rampant, out of control. And Reggie White said, "Michael, my greatest fear for you is that God will have to take the proverbial two before to ever get your attention." What will it take for God to get your attention? As God speaks to Moses, as he continues in this conversation, we finally understand the agenda of why God is meeting with him. Listen to what it says in verse 7 and 8. He says, "Moses, I've seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I've heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. And yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down." Notice what he says. "So I have come down to rescue them." And this is when he drops the bombshell on Moses. He says, "Now go, Moses, for I am sending you to Pharaoh, and you will lead my people out of Egypt." I think honestly, friends, if we look at Moses' story realistically, I think most of us have a sense that maybe in days gone by, maybe in his early years as a man, he thought, "One day I might deliver these folks. You know, I'm watching the harshness and the harsh treatment that they're finding. And one day, you know what, man, I may be the deliverer of these people." But I want you to know something, friends. Moses has changed. His life has changed. Moses is not the prince of Egypt anymore. He's a fugitive of Egypt. And now Moses is a much older man. He left Egypt when he was 40. There's an additional 40 years now. We find him at 80 years old. And for 40 years, think about this, for 40 years he's been separated from his people and his family. And I mean, certainly, don't you think that he thinks those days are in the past? Don't you think that he realizes those bridges have been burned? Those dreams that I've long given them up, I don't even want to think about them anymore. I'm so tired of that, I don't even want to go. But here's a crazy thing. God didn't think that way. In fact, God knew that Moses was the exact person for the exact job. And the only problem was is that Moses didn't see it that way. And here's the truth. That's because Moses no longer saw himself that way. You see, most of us, honestly, like Moses, most of us like Moses, have to overcome some personal hurdles before we can even begin to see ourselves as God sees us. And the first hurdle is this: at some point, you and I have to begin to see ourselves as God sees us and move past our own doubts. You know, I remember when I was a little boy, we were in Williamsburg, Virginia, and you know the history of our country, you know some of the magnificent history of that place. And I had swam in a pool earlier that day and swam with my eyes open, as I always did, but someone had dumped way too much chlorine in this pool. And when I got out, honestly, my eyes were so red, they were kind of swollen, and the whole night was blurry. And I remember we were going to all these historic places, and even as a young boy, I loved history. It just moved me. And I remember being so frustrated that I couldn't see well, that I couldn't get past the blurriness. I want you to hear me, friends. It's sometimes so easy for you and me to lose sight how Jesus, our Redeemer, actually sees us. Our own doubt, our own brokenness, our own poor choices, our own failures, our own just past mistakes, I promise you, can absolutely blur our eyesight to the place that we can't visualize ourselves the way God desires to visualize us. And for us to do that, you and I have to get over always doubting ourselves. Can I say it again? We have to get over always doubting ourselves. Listen to verse 11. "But Moses protested to God." Now listen, this is a strong word in the Hebrew. When he says he protests, it literally means that he speaks really with force. He's almost angry about it. He comes to argue with God. And he says, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? And he says it again, who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt? I mean, just notice that phrase, who am I? What he's literally saying is, I'm not good enough, I'm not qualified, I don't have what it takes. And here's what we know. The first thing that we hear from Moses, the first thing that we hear from Moses in response to God's call on his life is this. Moses doubted his own worth, and Moses doubted his own potential. You know what we have to understand? This truly was a different Moses. He's no longer young and self-assured. He's been living in brokenness long enough that he's taken brokenness on. Any of you relate to that? He's been living in defeat long enough that he's taken defeat on. He's been living in failure long enough that he's taken failure on. And he's literally saying, I'm in no shape or position to go back. And I certainly don't have any capacity to declare the freedom of our people because I'm not free myself. And you know what, honestly, when I think about this, I think his thoughts make perfect sense, don't you? I mean, honestly, I mean, in the natural order of things, in the natural order of things, don't you think Moses is absolutely right? But I want you to understand, here's the deal changer. God doesn't work, and God is not restricted by the natural order of things. Remember, he's the same God that kept fire from burning the bush up. Please hear me, friends. That's why so many times God's call and ask of our lives doesn't make perfect common sense, because it's not in the normal order that we would line it up in. You know, in our small group this past Tuesday night, we were talking about some of the book. And I want you to know, our small group is just fun. We have a lot of young couples and young singles. And if you fit in that category, you don't have a group yet, check with Ellen and me. You're welcome to come to the house even as we continue in this. But as we're, and honestly, it's a great group. It'd be an even better group if I taught better lessons, but I'm working on that. And they're very gracious with me. And during our discussion, someone just spoke to us and said, hey, I want to go back to these words. And notice what it says when Batterson writes these. He says, when God called Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt, Moses felt like it was too big. He felt like he wasn't qualified. So he asked God to send someone else to do it. He said, that is par for the course. It's been my experience, Batterson writes. You never feel qualified. But Batterson states, and this is the key, God doesn't call the qualified, God qualifies the call. Don't you love that? God doesn't call the qualified, God qualifies the called. You see, what's important here is not Moses' doubt. Please hear me. What's important here is not Moses' doubt, and in the same way, what's important in this whole arena of second chances is not your doubt. What's important here is how God replies to Moses' doubt. Listen to the words. Verse 12, he just simply says, and God said, after he doubted, after he said, who am I to do this? This is what he says. Moses, I will be with you. You see, God understands something extremely critical in this whole journey. And that is that the fulfillment of this journey would never be determined by the deficiencies or the sufficiencies of Moses. The fulfillment of the task ahead is ultimately dependent on the presence and power of God being present and involved. Now let me say it again, because what you and I have to understand is that we have to stay in the presence of God, and we have to make certain God is always involved. Because we can walk alone so much that we get used to leaving God to the side. God simply said to Moses, I will be with you. And in God's understanding, friends, in God's understanding, that was absolutely, unequivocally enough. Please know, friends, the determination and outcome of mine and your journey is the same. So much so, I want us to read verse 12, that immediately followed verse 11 of him saying, Moses, I will be with you. Notice what he says. And this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. Now notice what he says. This is your sign, Moses. This is the thing that's going to affirm that I'm with you. He said, when you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. You see, for God, failure is not even an option. It's not even a word, a concept that comes up into his mind. I mean, God is already planning the first worship service after they exit Egypt. He said, I want you to know something, Moses. There's an assurance. There's going to be a principle at work that you've got to take a hold of. And it is this principle, Moses. If I call you, Moses, I will go with you, Moses. If God calls, friends, God goes with. God does not call unless God is committed. Hear me. God does not call if God is not committed to walk the journey with us. Philippians 1:6 says, Paul writes, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion, what? Until the day of Christ Jesus. That means until the end of time. Now, there's a second thing. Moses not only doubts himself, Moses is more like us than we ever imagined. Moses also is worried about what other people will think. Uh-oh. Now you're really getting close to home, Roland. Listen to what he says. But he says, but Moses protested again. Man, he's not done arguing. He's kind of a strong-willed guy. He said, if I go to the people of Israel and I tell them, the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what's his name, Moses? Don't you love that? What's his name, Moses? And then he says this, then what should I tell them? You see, Moses not only doubted his worth, Moses doubted at what other people would think of him. And in this question, Moses is insinuating that people will literally say of him and about him, he doesn't even know who God is. I mean, he's worried that they might say, hey, look, old Moses been gone a long time. A lot of water's passed under that bridge. I'm not sure if old Moses even knows who God is anymore. Let me ask another pertinent question. How many of us from time to time are literally paralyzed from sometimes moving forward in a relationship, moving forward in our call with Christ, moving forward in pursuing something that may seem bigger than us because we're ultimately afraid of what other people will think? How many of us are reluctant to share our faith? How many of us are reluctant to speak about our faith because we're ultimately afraid of how others will perceive us? And I'm going to be honest with you, friends. I think we all probably deal with this in one way or another. But I want us to take in again how God replies to Moses' question. And this is what he says in verse 14. I am who I am, Moses. I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. Friends, did you know that sometimes our being, who we are, is determined by other things? Like, let's say, for instance, our DNA is not only determined by the present, is it? It's determined by what's also been passed down to you and me from the past. Did you know sometimes circumstances, as Jessica and Joe were talking about, sometimes our story is not just determined by us, but other circumstances and other people. And because of this, honestly, because of this, we respond differently to different situations and different folks. But let's be clear about something. Let's be clear about something. God is not determined in the same fashion or with the same grid that we are. Know what God said to Moses, and let's take a deeper look. He said, Moses, I am who I am. Do you know what those words literally mean? Do you know what he's declaring to Moses? And he wants Moses to declare to the Israelites. It means I am so great, Moses, that I determine me. No other force, no other person. I determine me. He literally means I am so great, Moses, that I am without creation. I am who I am. He's literally saying, I have been, I am, I always will be. And this is what he wants Moses to say. Moses, I want you to tell him, yeah, he's that God. Say to the people, I am has sent me to you. You see, what God wanted Moses to understand was that Moses wasn't walking alone anymore. When he came in the name of I Am, he came under his power and his presence and his provision. When he walked in before Pharaoh, when he walked in before the elders of the Israelites, he literally walked in not alone, but he walked in as I Am surrounded him, covered him, empowered him, embraced him. So many times, friends, we think we're alone, but what we have to understand is when the I Am is with you, you are never alone. And his power walks with you. I love the story of a little boy whose mom brought him in. They were going through tough times. And she said, "Son, we've got some butter that I've churned, and I'm going to ask you to go door to door to the neighbors. And I'm going to ask you to first ask them for 50 cents per pound. But if they won't, just tell them, you know what, I will take 25 cents per pound. We need you to sell this butter." And so he makes his way, and the very first place he goes to is an old crusty neighbor down the road, kind of a negative guy, kind of a tough guy. And he opens the door, and the little boy just stands in front of him, just I'm petrified by him. And he said, "My mom sent me here to sell some butter, and she told me that I need to ask 50 cents per pound, but she said if you don't want to pay 50 cents, we'll take 25 cents for it. Would you like any butter?" And the man just looked at him and smiled. He said, "Son, I'm about to teach you a lesson." He said, "I want you to know I'm going to buy all your butter. And I'm going to buy it for 25 cents per pound. But I want you to know I would have bought all of it for 50 cents per pound if you hadn't told me everything about what happened." He gave the little boy the money, and the little boy turned around and he's walking away. He said, "I didn't tell you everything. I didn't tell you that our cat fell in the butter." A little bit better salesman than he thought, wasn't he? Let me tell you everything about the incredible God we serve and who loves us. When you and I are given a second chance, please hear me. When you and I are given a second chance and God asks us to step out in faith regarding a situation or something, a call in our lives, we are never alone. Never. We are covered by the name and the power and the presence of Jesus. And friends, please hear me. He is the one who has been, is, and always will be. Today, we're going to get to celebrate communion. What a wonderful time, isn't it? What a wonderful opportunity and time for God to have our attention. I don't know what you've gone through this week. I love the way Jason gave us time to pray today. Because there's so many times I realize that we walk into this place and we never know the disappointments of the week or the hurts of the week or the discoveries of the week that sometimes elate us and sometimes deflate us. But God knows. And perhaps today you just need a moment to not only allow God to get your attention, but please hear me, friends, that you will give your attention to God. And you will take a moment this morning to reconnect in a genuine, personal, name-to-name basis. And you will drink the cup and you'll eat the bread today. You know that they signify literally his body given for us. You'll come to some reawareness, some recollection, if you will, as they say down south, of all that Jesus gave for you and me in order to know us personally. And you will thank him. You will thank him for his sacrifice. But more than that, you will look at the newness that he can provide in your life. He said, "This is the new covenant made possible through my blood." There's something miraculous about it. There's something powerful about it. There's something life-giving about it. And what it has to do with me personally coming into your life. I hope today that God will not only get your attention. My prayer today, friends, is as you go through communion today, that God would get your heart. And for that, for that second chance. I am unbelievably grateful. I'm going to ask you to stand, and as the worship team leads us, I'm just going to ask on two sides, I want to invite the young ladies who are going to be serving us.